Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer, and joining me now is Ozzy Pabra, political reporter for Capital New York with the latest on the transition to a de Blasio administration. Ozzy, hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Great.
The de Blasio administration, they're having a press conference today at noon. Now, we could just say, hey, let's wait and report on it. But no, I want you to guess what's going to happen. Is he going to make an appointment today?
Well, I can guarantee you that whatever I guess, the complete opposite will happen. So
okay.
If I say that it's going to be an administration member, you can guarantee it'll be a policy announcement. And if I say it's a policy initiative that he's, you know, further describing, that it will be a personnel announcement. So I've had a very bad track record of these things.
Okay, well, that's fine. That means you're a very good contraindicator. I'll give you some more clues, or I'll give the audience some more clues. It's at a manufacturing, the press conference is at a manufacturing facility called Milgo Bufkin. It's a custom metal fabricator in Greenpoint. Ah, does that lead you to think that it might be like the chair of the Economic Development Corporation?
That very well could be, and how de Blasio deals with improving the city's economy is one of the things that I and a lot of other reporters are closely watching. Remember, he campaigned on the idea that the city is divided between the haves and have-nots, between the two New Yorks. And one of the questions that really wasn't asked to him as directly or detailed as well is, well, how do you close it? You know, the powers of the mayor are somewhat limited. You know, the public sector can only do so much in spurring private sector growth at times. And is Mayor de Blasio's goal to mitigate the pain of the people who live in the quote-unquote other New York, or is he literally going to try to do more to put money in their pockets? And that's something that has been an intractable problem for governors and mayors throughout the country. So the question about how he deals with the economic impact the impact of the income inequality that he so aptly described in the campaign is one of the things that people are going to be closely watching. And today we might be getting part of that answer.
Right. What he campaigned on and talked about the most was sort of reapportioning the pie, right? He wasn't as detailed. And look, I'm sure he issued 48,000 policy papers and he could say it's all there. But, you know, his emphasis was about how to redraw the pie so that the poor weren't getting this tiny little slice. He hasn't talked that much about growing the pie in general.
No, he's spoken about things that the city can do to improve the lives of people that are struggling, as Anthony Weiner was often described as saying, you know, those in the middle class are those struggling to make it. De Blasio has spoken about, you know, universal pre-K, expanding the paid sick time bill, and things of that nature, which don't exactly put as much money into someone's pocket as it makes them enable to live a better quality of life on the low wage that they are currently earning. So it'll be interesting to see 4 years from now, how do you measure the impact of a de Blasio mayorality after he campaigned so aptly on the city having a problem. You know, it's sort of easy to campaign by diagnosing the problem. It's much harder to get a grade on how well you cured it.
Now, if any of our listeners have a big chart on their walls tracking the mayor's cabinet and only one or two figures are actually filled in, you have Bratton, you have Anthony Shores, we could start filling in a couple more figures we know. So there is Gladys Carrion. She's going to lead the administration for children's services. She's a veteran civil service. What do we know about Gladys Carrion?
Well, the one thing that we know is that she fits the mold of what de Blasio likes, and that's someone with a lot of government experience. And by a lot, I mean a lot, many, many years in the public sector. In fact, he is sort of running the anti-Bloomberg sort of transition. You know, Bloomberg was very proud of bringing in people from outside of government that had private sector experience. And de Blasio is grabbing people who are lifetime civil servants that have done admirable jobs but aren't as well known and maybe have not made as big of a splash in newspapers throughout their careers. But these are people who have very serious track records in public service. And Ms. Carrion is someone who, you know, has worked in the Dickens administration. She worked for Cuomo. And for Cuomo, she helped run the Office of Family and Child Services. And one of the things that she did there was help institute a policy of having youthful offenders dealt with in their neighborhoods and housed locally rather than ship them upstate, which was a very big talking point for Andrew Cuomo during the campaign. Remember, he was running against Carl Paladino from Buffalo, And Palladino, in his very unpolished style of campaigning, had described housing people in these upstate facilities and said, we'll retrain them to reenter society and even offer them tips about hygiene, which you can imagine went over horribly with voters. And Andrew Cuomo capitalized on that by saying there's a better approach to this. We can house people locally. We can keep them in their communities. We can keep families intact. And there's a much more progressive way of dealing with people that need this type of help.
Yeah. So if you look at his appointments so far, I mean, Mayor Bloomberg is a guy from outside government who thinks that brilliant people can learn the ways of government, when often his appointments would reflect that. He also had very experienced people. But it seems like de Blasio is going with, one of the best things you could have is just a long, long resume that includes a lot of government service. What's the reason behind that, do you think?
Well, you know, it's often been said that Democrats have a belief in government and Republicans do not. And therefore, when you get a Democrat in office, one of the things that they try to do is instill a positive view of the role that government can play in people's lives. And one of the best ways to do that is to have it run by people who know how it's supposed to work. If you bring in people with the private sector experience, they clearly have a set of skills that have worked well for them in the private sector. But as Michael Bloomberg has often complained, the things that you can do in the private sector – like test an experiment, see it fail, end it, and then still consider it a success because you learned something, well, that's not something you can do as easily in the public sector because you're dealing with people's money and you're dealing with policies and things that are a little bit more intractable than a private sector rollout of a new widget or a gadget.
Right.
So de Blasio, who spent his lifetime around public service, is validating the idea that government can run and run well and have a positive impact, and here are the people that can do it, and their experience is operating within government.
Right, but there's also the other side of it, which is you want to appoint the people that you know, the people that – I don't mean just friends, but the people who come in your circle. And, you know, if you're a CEO or an aspiring CEO, you always meet someone and keep in the back of your mind, oh, this might be a good person down the line to tap. You know, de Blasio is going to have come into contact with a lot more public servants, and Bloomberg would have come into contact with, you know, people who are CEOs. That comes into too. Let's talk about another specific person who you're reporting about, Rafael Sestero, to head HPD. What do we know about him?
He's someone that we're going to hear a little bit more about, but HPD is an incredibly important agency, in part because they're the ones who are doing all of these multi-year projects that really have an impact on quality of life. Michael Bloomberg has spent a long time talking about the third water tunnel that is going to come online years from now, but it is going to become incredibly important should anything, God forbid, ever happen to the city's water supply where access to it becomes challenged. We now have a backup supply, and the people who are running that are the agency that handles that. HPD is one of the more challenging agencies that the city's going to have to deal with.
What about schools chancellor? That's the big one that everyone's wondering about. Top name floated around, Carmen Farina, also someone with, right, you know, years of experience. She's – how old is she? 73, I think. 70. At first she was saying, there's no way I'll do it. Then the last thing we heard is like, oh, you know, if called, I might serve.
Well, also, she's someone who de Blasio has known quite a while from their days back in Park Slope. Remember, before de Blasio was elected to the city council, he was – a school board member, and one of the people that he had interacted with was Farina. So he likes dealing with people who he's sort of interacted with before or have come into the sort of circle that he's experienced. A lot of the people that he's appointing, you know, have ties to the Dinkins administration or that he has worked with directly. Farina, from what our sources have been telling us, has been sort of reluctant to take the job, but might take it if there's a structure in it that will enable her to sort of delegate powers in how the school system is run. Remember, it's the largest school system in the country, and how and currently the mayor of New York City has mayoral control over it. So there's no avoiding the responsibility. The mayor is going to appoint the person who runs the school. If anything happens with the school, the responsibility, you know, credit and demerits all roll back to City Hall and how that operates.
Let's move on to City Council. Speaker elected Melissa Mark Viverito. She was named Speaker last week. She had enough votes to win. She had the first Latino woman or person of color in that post. She is de Blasio's pick. Councilman Dan Garadnik says, it's not over. What is the latest count?
The latest, well, you know, the Garadnik people will say that there has been no count officially, but the ones that, that people are going by are the 30 supporters that Viverito has announced and the 20 that are either affirmatively aligned with Garadnik or just have not announced their support, which you could argue just put them in that category by default. What's interesting is that one of my colleagues, Sally Goldenberg, has reported on the policy differences between Viverito and de Blasio. Now, they've both spoken about income inequality. They both identify themselves as progressives, but as progressive Democrats. But when you get down into the nitty-gritty, there actually are some differences between what they would like. Mm-hmm. One of the things is that Viverito has supported voting rights for non-citizen residents, and that's something that de Blasio hasn't fully committed on. So when you start getting into the specifics of what it means to operate a government and what it means to pass legislation, there might be some more daylight between these two than's been recognized so far.
What about their, you know, personal styles? That often is so much more important than, you know, the two or three policy differences they have.
Well, it's very interesting. Not to tip my hand too early, but the personal side of Viverito is one of the things that I'm currently working on. And what we're seeing so far from de Blasio is a very methodical tactician's approach to operating a government. He's not sort of being bullied by reporters complaining about a slow rollout of his administration. He was very, you know, cool and methodical about how he ran his campaign and waiting till the last weeks to really put all of his efforts into a campaign ad. And
right.
they managed to hold on to support while everyone else was paying attention to Anthony Weiner and the more splashier candidates. I think we're still getting a sense as to how Viverito will operate. There were grumblings about, you know, her friendships with people in the council or lack thereof, but we really haven't seen her in a management position. We really haven't seen how much she operates and delegates and what she would do in terms of allowing council chairmen to sort of run their own operations.
Well, if the votes are behind her, I mean, reading through some of the other reports I've read and what you're saying, maybe a bit of a divisive figure, but then you're also detailing how the votes are behind her. So is she really as divisive, which is maybe a little bit of a code word, as she's been portrayed?
Well, the other side would always like to portray their opponents as divisive or somehow unelectable. I think what's interesting is that, you know, it's been reported pretty widely that de Blasio weighed in with council members, said explicitly how important it is for him to get an ally in office. And that's exactly the kind of criticism he levied against Christine Quinn during the mayor's race, was that she was too close to the mayor, that she was too much of an ally of the person at City Hall and didn't act as a check and balance. Well, now he's saying that he needs someone who arguably will act like a Christine Quinn to his version of City Hall.
Right. Well, when you're running against someone, it's different. Yeah.
Exactly. Now everything is different. Now I'm in charge.
Yeah. We need a Christine Quinn type now that she's vanquished. Well, Ozzy Papera of Capital New York, thanks so much for this chat.
Thanks for having me.